This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
This week, it's another edition of our scientific feature, Inventor's Corner. After our last edition, such a flood of inventors wrote in asking to appear that we've invited both of them along tonight.
And the first one has invented a device which she calls a dirt spray. I take it, madam, that this is for removing dirt by means of a spray.
Oh, no, sir. No, this is for spraying dirt on.
Spraying dirt on?
Yes, sir. I think I can speak for thousands of ordinary housewives when I say I'm just about fed up with all these detergents. I'm just sick and tired of my wash coming out that awful bright white, whiter than white, bright whiteness.
You don't approve of it?
Well, it's unnatural, isn't it? Do you know my sheets come out so blinding we can't get to sleep at night for the glare? And as for my hubby's hankies, well, sir, they're so dazzling he has to put on dark glasses to blow his nose. Well, really, it's got to such a pitch my hubby said to me the only answer is a short squirt of dirt, Gert.
Yes, I see. Hence your dirt spray.
Yes, that's it, sir. Oh. With this, I'm able to give back to my weekly wash that nice, homely, greyish you.
Well, this is an invention that is definitely needed. Thank you for coming along, Mrs. Bradshaw. And mention of a short squirt brings us to our next inventor, Mr. Cyril Larkin, who I'm happy to say is a BBC employee.
How do you do?
On a wooden fence post is open. Were it to be closed, it would bar passage between a cemented courtyard and an earth track that ascends a shallow slope. The track is flanked on its right-hand side by a straggly hedge into which two telegraph poles are rooted. On its left-hand side, a lower hedge from which there grow young trees separates the track from a field which descends on the back of a small hill. Wheels have worn the track on either side, but along its middle there remains a band of grass. Edging gradually to the left, the track ascends towards a very green field on which sheep are grazing. On either side of the track, narrow grass verges precede straggly hedges from which increasing numbers of trees grow as the track approaches the field. Towards the end of the track's ascent, the hedge on its right-hand side is interrupted by an opening that is barred by a grey metal gate. That was great. It was a really agreeable few days. There's something that's so special about those times spent away. They let you forget about who you are and about what you do. And they let you step back from that impulse always to define yourself. A narrow tarmac road is flanked on either side by hedges. It bends left, around three trees that grow from the hedge on its left-hand side and heads towards a small white house with a pitched slate roof and a chimney. Beyond this, and in the distance, is a hill populated by fields and woods. A number of cars are parked outside the house on the left-hand side of the road. As it passes the cars, the road begins a shallow descent around a tall, clipped hedge on its right-hand side and towards a few farm buildings that are visible on the hill beyond. Telegraph poles are rooted to the hedges on either side of the road. The road continues its descent, bending to the left. Telegraph poles are rooted to the hedges on either side of it. The road continues its descent, bending to the left. Telegraph poles are rooted to the hedge on its right-hand side. Beneath two large trees with overhanging branches, a track leads perpendicularly away from the left-hand side of the road. On meeting the track, the road abandons its straight course and begins to veer right around a telegraph pole. Each time that we drive back, I find that I can never really realize when our journey begins. We always do the same things. We pack our bags, we say our goodbyes, and we drive up the track, waving out of the window. And then we find ourselves on the road, on this route that we know so well. But it's impossible to recognize the exact moment when our journey begins. Abandoning a straight course to veer left where a telegraph pole is rooted to the cropped hedge on its left-hand side, the road continues to descend, its vantage on the hill beyond steadily diminishing. The road S's, first left and then right, descending towards large trees. The hill beyond is almost entirely obscured by these trees and by the tall hedges that flank the road on either side. Light brown leaves are scattered on either side of the road as it bends sharp right, veering away from the large trees. On the left-hand side of the road, at the sharpest point of the bend, a series of intermittent white lines on the tarmac indicate a junction. We turn left here, don't we? It's strange how I still have to ask you that. I think that I just want to delay that moment in which I have to structure my thoughts. A road descends through a small wood that is populated by large trees. Light brown leaves line either side of the road until it emerges from the wood and begins an ascent, bending to the right.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And that track is called Driving Back by Juan Cruise, and it's a text which accompanied an exhibition at Camden Arts Centre. Driving back from 2000 at the Camden Arts Centre, Arkwright Road, Juan Cruz, unauthorised copying, hiring, lending, public performance and broadcasting of this recording prohibited. Aha. Okay. Before that, we heard a brief extract, The Cream of Take It From Here, featuring Jimmy Edwards and Dick Bentley, June Whitfield and Wallace Eaton. And that was called Inventor's Corner, which was cut off also. And we'll be hearing from the Glums later and Charles Bukowski. And before that, from Text Sound Compositions by Tamás Ungvári, Announcement. And before that even, Lars Gunnar Bodin, Semicolon, Seance 4, realised at EMS Stockholm in 1965. Voices by the artist Øyvind Fallström, Bengt Emil Jonsson, Gunn Kalmer and Lars Gunnar Bodin. Previously released in a shortened version on the 3-CD compilation Bits and Pieces, the full-length version presented here is previously unreleased, and that's on a vinyl LP issued by Folkingen Records. So we'll press on with that.
Rummet var tapetserat med ett silvernät för att hålla hans hjärna intakt för påverkningar utifrån. Sen svävar han lätt tvärs över bordet och slår sig ned.
Den andra stirrar och börjar darra, tycks tveka. Men som flyttad av osynliga händer placerar han sig sedan under den.
Så där ja, nu är jag.
Är det inte skojigt? Nu är jag det också.
Han roade sig med att konstruera långa pseudologiska tankekedjor
En lät så här, något förkortad.
A är jag, är B, är ni alla andra.
En annan lät så här.
Några relationer mellan A och B i förhållande till antal gånger. En snabb förändring in till oigenkännlighet.
Ska jag säga biskop då?
Ja, det går för sig.
Ska jag säga entré då?
Ja, det går för sig.
Ska jag säga...
Ja, det går för sig.
Som en individ utan andra extraordinära egenskaper än en hjärna över medelmåttan begagnade han naturligtvis folk med paranormala fallenheter, men brydde sig inte om deras sällskap.
Befinner oss alltså på grusgången. Det är tydligt att vi befinner oss på grusgången. Vi får hoppas att maskineriet inte rasslar. några händelser. Ett slags väsande, gurglande ljud från vattenkranen. En generande tystnad. Ett artistiskt svep med musleven. Före varje föremåls framträdande hörs en trumpetstöt. Snart pinglar han med klockorna och tänder rökelsen.
Kommer du ihåg Johannes?
Det spelar ingen roll längre. Det är överspelat. Det är ett passerat stadium.
En förändring till det bättre. Sidbyte vid oavgjort.
En inre monolog i en svår situation.
Aha. En annan apparat längre bort i labyrinten.
En rad förvridna ansikten.
Nu har han kommit. Vill ni fråga vad han heter?
Ja, ni heter Sturri Pettersson. Nej, jag vet inte om det är Pettersson.
Vi befinner oss alltså fortfarande på grusgången, nu dock i något förändrat skick.
Ja, jag tänker mig någon form av servostyrning för de här föremålen. Så de svevar omkring, liksom tyngdlösa i rummet.
Kaffetermos, skrivmaskin, telefon, jordglob, väckarklocka, korg.
Ja, man kan ju också tänka sig tyngdkraften som en sorts osynliga gummiband. Man kan ju också tänka sig tyngdkraften som en sorts osynliga gummiband. Ja, man kan ju också tänka sig tyngdkraften som en sorts osynliga gummiband. Man kan ju också tänka sig tyngdkraften som en sorts osynliga gummiband.
Ett sätt att förstå dessa företeelser är att tillägna sig en annan tidsuppfattning. En tidsuppfattning som inte är linjär. Den linjära tidsupplevelsen bottnar i språkets och tankens ett i taget karaktär. Vi reducerar erfarenheten till enheter som är tillräckligt enkla för att fattas en åt gången. I själva verket så är det våra bristande resurser som gör oss oförmögna att uppfatta tiden på något annat sätt. Allt sker samtidigt. Det kanske inte finns varken början eller slut, något som pågår eller inte pågår. Som till exempel följande. Skriva impertinenta brev. Skrämma hushållerskan. Kasta ut böckerna ur bokhyllan. Hålla sig fast vid en krok och långsamt klia papegojan. Sätta eld på huset.
Det hände i djungeln. Jag blev sjuk. Jag visste inte vad det var först. Det började med att det uppstod små bulnader på överkroppen.
Först brydde jag mig inte om det, men så småningom blev dessa allt större och började mörkna i färgen.
Jag kände mig allt sämre. Till slut låg jag flämtande på tältbritsen. De hade blivit stora som tennisbollar. Efter 9 dagar sprack bulnaderna sönder och små svarta huvuden trängde fram ur kroppen. Men det var inte det värsta. De förtalade mig också på det grövsta.
Slumpmässig blockbildning.
Snidat skrin. Snidat skrin.
Telefon.
Kaffetermos.
Snidat telefon.
Snidat skrin.
Korgmaskin.
Frukt.
Väckarklocka.
Telefon.
Väckarklocka.
Telefon.
Glob. Fruktglob.
När den blå lampan tänds kommer Johannes.
Han sa, det är samma symptom som jag lagt märke till hos personer som kläms till döds i en folksamling. Han svarade, skulle jag ha rätt så kommer ni att befrias för alltid om ni utsätter kvarlevorna för starkt solsken. Börja.
Angelägenhetsgrad 15.
Procedure.
1. Grävande man.
If real, go to.
Kommentar. Mannen liksom upplöses då och då i en halvgenomskinlig gas under grävningen och försvinner sedan för en kort stund.
Kommentarer av detta slag får alltså inskjutas inom given kostnadsram.
If true, go to.
Trycksaker.
If false, go to.
Varuprov.
Procedure.
2. Radioaktivt utfall.
Then, go to comment.
Kraftreglage. Godkännes 5 enheter i favör.
Kommentar. Allt klart.
Print.
Skenaktivitet.
Comment.
Allt klart.
Stop.
Tillbringa en stor del av sitt liv med att undersöka denna speciella soptunna.
This whole strange affair starts at the London house of Major Adrian Dawlish and his lovely wife, Claire. They have just finished dinner.
Something's wrong, isn't it, Adrian? You've been very quiet all the evening, and you've hardly touched your sweet.
I'm sorry, my sweet. Claire, cast your mind back. Do you remember a fellow called Clapper?
Clapper? The name does ring a bell.
Jim Clapper. He was my batman during the war. Last I heard from him was a letter in 47. Said he was now working in a chemist's shop, and if ever I was down his way, he'd see me all right for centipods. This afternoon, Clapper rang me, out of the blue. He sounded very distressed and frightened. He asked me if he could see me this evening. He suggested tennis.
But you haven't played for years. Besides, well, what could have happened to him?
Is that the front door?
No, it's the back door. The front door's Wagner. Well, if that's Clapper, I'd better leave you alone with him, Adrian. I'll be in the kitchen. I'll just take off this dress and put on a jug of coffee.
Coming. Well, hello, old boy. Do come in. I say, there's nobody here. I can't see anybody.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Major.
Clapper, it's your voice, but where are you?
Right in front of you, Major, on the doormat. Begging your pardon, Major, and meaning no disrespect. I'm invisible.
Invisible? I don't believe it. It's a trick. Prove you're invisible. Do something to prove that you're actually standing there. Clapper, release my nose.
Do you believe I'm invisible now, Major?
Well, I've got to. But this is incredible. You'd better come in.
Begging your pardon, sir, I've come in. I'm behind you now.
What?
Major, what am I going to do? It's horrible, this being invisible. What am I going to do if I'm still invisible tomorrow morning? How am I going to shave if I've got nothing to aim at?
Now, steady, man. Don't be hysterical.
I won't even be able to see me moustache. Oh, sir, one wrong wave of the razor, I could be semi-detached. Oh, sir.
Clapper, Clapper.
Oh, sir.
You know, please get a grip on yourself.
I can't see any of myself to get a grip on. Oh, sir.
Clapper, now.
Oh, sir.
Brace up. Now, let's calm down. Calm down, shall we?
It was Philly, and the bartender said, what? And I said, give me a draft, Jim. Got to get the nerves straight. I'm going to look for a job. You, he said, a job? Yeah, Jim, I saw something in the paper. No experience necessary. And he said, hell, you don't want a job. And I said, hell no, but I need money. And I finished the beer, and I got on the bus, and I watched the numbers, and soon the numbers got closer. And then I was right there, and I pulled the cord, and the bus stopped, and I got off. It was a large building made of tin. The sliding door was stuck in the dirt. I pulled it back and went in. And there wasn't any floor, just more ground, lumpy, wet, and it stank. And there were sounds like things being sawed in half, and things drilled, and it was dark. And men walked on girders overhead, and men pushed trucks across the ground, and men sat at machines doing things. And there were shots of lightning and thunder, and suddenly a bucket full of flame came swinging at my head. It roared and boiled with flame. It hung from a loose chain that came right at me, and somebody hollered, hey, look out! And I just ducked under the bucket, feeling the heat go over me. And somebody asked, what do you want? And I said, where's the nearest cracker? And I was told, and I went inside. Then came out and saw silhouettes of men moving through flame and sound. I walked to the door, got outside, took the bus back to town, and sat down, and ordered another draft. And Jim asked, what happened? And I said, they didn't want me, Jim. Then this whore came in and sat down, and everybody looked at her. She looked fine. I remember it was the first time in my life I almost wished I had a vagina and clit instead of what I had. But in two or three days, I got over that. I was reading the want ads again. Okay.
Thank you.
Shoeshine man. The balance is preserved by snails climbing the Santa Monica cliffs. The luck is walking down Western Avenue and having the girls in the massage parlor holler at you, "Hello, sweetie." The miracle is having five women in love with you at the age of 55. And the goodness that you're only able to love one of them. The gift is having a daughter more gentle than you are, whose laughter is finer than yours. The peace comes from driving a blue 67 Volt through the streets like a teenager, radio tuned to the host who loves you most, feeling the sun, feeling the solid hum of the rebuilt motor, as you needle through traffic. The grace is being able to like rock music, symphony music, jazz, anything that contains the original energy of joy. And the probability that returns is the deep blue low, yourself flat upon yourself within the guillotine walls, angry at the sound of the phone or anybody's footsteps passing. But the other probability, the lilting high that always follows, makes the girl at the check stand in the supermarket look like Marilyn, like Jackie before they got her Harvard lover, like the girl in high school that we all followed home. There is that which helps you believe in something else besides death. Somebody in a car approaching on a street too narrow, and he or she pulls aside to let you by. Or the old fighter, Bo Jack's shining shoes, after blowing the entire bankroll on parties, on women, on parasites, humming, breathing on the leather, working the rag, looking up and saying, "What the hell? I had it for a while, that beats the other." I am bitter sometimes, but the taste has often been sweet. It's only like I feared to say it. It's like when your woman says, "Tell me you love me," and you can't. If you see me grinning from my blue Volks, running a yellow light, driving straight into the sun, I will be locked into the arms of a crazy life, thinking of trapeze artists, of midgets with big cigars, of a poetry reading in Hamburg, of Chopin with his bag of Polish soil, of an old waitress bringing me an extra cup of coffee and laughing as she does so. The best of you I like more than you think. The others don't count except that they have fingers and heads and some of them eyes and most of them legs and all of them good and bad dreams and a way to go. Justice is everywhere and it's working and the machine guns and the frogs and the hedges will tell you so. Das ist alles. Dankeschön.
Sitting here on the sofa, quietly doing the crossword together. Fancy you finishing your copy of the crossword already, and I've hardly started. You are clever, aren't you, Ron?
Yes, Eth.
I must just check if I've got some of my answers right. Ron, what have you put down for eight across, beloved?
Eight across, flobbergob.
Flobbergob? I've never heard of that word, Ron.
Neither have I, Em.
Oh, Ron, the idea is you put down real words. You mustn't just put down anything.
Oh, can I have a borrow of your rubber, then?
You are. You see, Ron, it's no good making up words. They've got to mean real things.
I see. Is there such a thing as a zosh?
No, Ron.
An akbok.
No, Ron.
A yiff.
No, dearest.
Oh, you'd better leave the rubber my side, beloved.
Ron, and I thought you'd finished. Flobbergob. The clue was forsaken, eight letters, and the answer's derelict, Ron.
Derelict.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad if you'd got abandoned.
Oh, right, Oweth, yes. Yes.
Ron, now I mean that.
Well, just a kiss.
Oh, Ron, you're getting your biro sticking in my ear.
Oh. Hello, hello, hello. What's this, Ron converting a try?
Wants to veer right around a telegraph pole. Each time that we drive back, I find that I can never really realise when our journey begins. We always do the same things. We pack our bags, we say our goodbyes, and we drive up the track, waving out of the window. And then we find ourselves on the road, on this route that we know so well. But it's impossible to recognise the exact moment when our journey begins. Abandoning a straight course to veer left where a telegraph pole is rooted to the cropped hedge on its left-hand side, the road continues to descend, its vantage on the hill beyond steadily diminishing. The road S's, first left and then right, descending towards large trees. The hill beyond is almost entirely obscured by these trees and by the tall hedges that flank the road on either side. Light brown leaves are scattered on either side of the road as it bends sharp right, veering away from the large trees. On the left-hand side of the road, at the sharpest point of the bend, a series of intermittent white lines on the tarmac indicate a junction.
an ether of cheese. My wrist extended. A scalpel.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you liked what you heard and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.